This is Geek Speak, episode 26 of our 16th season. I'm Lyle Troxell, and with me in the studio is actually no one. This is another Geek Speak interview format in which we find someone, a geek, who is doing something interesting. FreeCodeCamp is an open source based organization dedicated to helping people to learn to code. They offer self-paced code challenges and certificates in front-end development, back-end development, and data visualization, and full-stack development. And all of this is free to the learning developer. There are a lot of amazing online resources for people to learn to code, but FreeCodeCamp does something very different. FreeCodeCamp runs software development projects that directly support nonprofit businesses. As a longtime volunteer for nonprofits and a professional software engineer, this idea brought up a lot of questions for me. So I decided to call Quincy Larson, who founded FreeCodeCamp in October 2014, and ask him a bit about it. Quincy, thanks for joining me on GeekSpeak.
Hey, how's it going, Lyle?
Quite well, quite well. So the whole CodeCamp concept of a whole bunch of resources online for people to learn how to program is not new. But what you're doing with nonprofits seems like a really different kind of take on it.
One of the reasons we wanted to involve nonprofits is it's a very good practical opportunity for our campers, which is what we call the people that work through FreeCodeCamp. We wanted to give them an opportunity to actually work on real world projects, and nonprofits have boundless technology needs that are generally not addressable due to budgetary constraints or just not even knowing where to start in terms of getting someone on board. A lot of these nonprofits are relatively small and just don't have practice those kinds of things.
When we're talking about, you know, software for nonprofits, like a content management system or some other system that's really dedicated to the thing that they're doing, getting that custom is, giant amount of money. I mean, a software package that's a custom software package that, you know, runs a business of like maybe 12 people, we're talking $100,000 or so to get a real quote from, you know, to get a quote from like a professional business that does business services. And that's just outside the scope of almost any nonprofit.
Right. And what we're able to do with FreeCodeCamp is we have all these campers who've just worked through about 1,200 hours worth of coding challenges. They built dozens of projects in preparation. And I can kind of walk you through how it works. We have two campers who pair program on building out the projects, and we have an agile project manager who basically divides all the different user stories into sprints. And so each project will be 10 one-week sprints, and then we have the nonprofit stakeholder, and they are directly involved in kind of translating the business needs of the nonprofit into these user stories. So we do everything using kind of extreme programming flavor, agile approach. Mm-hmm. And the goal, of course, is for the nonprofit, for the exact thing that they need to be done to be ultimately what our campers build. So every week we have a meeting where the nonprofits can look at the software. Basically, we do demos every week, and then we iterate on top of what is demoed, and we just generally kind of like progress toward the solution that the nonprofit actually needed to solve their underlying problem.
Let me unpack a few of those things right now for the general non-programming audience. Pair programming is exactly what it sounds like. You get two people that program at the same time. Because of local coding technologies, you don't actually have to be in the same location. And what this allows you to do is normally one person takes over the keyboard and both people are paying attention and they walk through and talk through the problem set. So it's very much like collaborative editing. You get a really great feedback mechanism when you do pair programming, because simple concepts that you might just do, you have to actually talk about as you do it. And in that talking, you actually learn more about what the problem scope is. So pair programming, really cool, very successful in a lot of formats, especially beginning programmers where they don't have a lot of history of expertise. So anything they're doing, they kind of want to talk it through. And then the other thing you mentioned is agile development practices. And I think I've talked about it on GeekSpeak a bit before, but in general, the concept of agile development, it's really hard to get into into all the details of all the different ways it works. But a really simple way to say it is, let's break every single task into a very, very small descriptive sentence and then implement that one sentence. At the end of that implementation cycle, and that's called a story, at the end of that, you actually get to see it. So instead of saying, I want to make a content management system, you say something like, I need to save users with passwords in a table, in a database. And then what that would mean is that all you implement is that one little step. So at the end of that one little cycle, you then can save new users into a database. And those stories are kind of driven by what you said is the stakeholder. And the stakeholder, of course, in this situation is probably a person that works at the nonprofit and kind of understands what the needs are.
Right.
You said the developers have 1,200 hours or so of experience going through these online tutorials, basically, these challenges. So they've already developed quite a bit of things. Those challenges meet very specific, kind of repetitive in some sense. Everybody goes through these challenges, and that just gets their skills up to par enough to even start this whole process. So the people that are pair programming have already had a whole bunch of training and certification from you guys that they know what they're doing, right?
Right. Yeah, they work through, basically, we break everything down into challenges, of which there are hundreds. And some of them might be as simple as showing you how to, for example, change the color of text in HTML. Some of them may be as elaborate as challenging you to create like a cipher, like a Caesar cipher type algorithm, or iterate over a specific type of data structure. Mm-hmm. So it really depends like where you are in our overall curriculum. But basically, it's 1,200 hours of programming. You're programming the entire time. We don't have videos. We don't have big text documents that you read. We try to make everything interactive so that you actually code for 1,200 hours.
And after the ends of these cycles of different chunks of these classes, these courses, they get certification. So basically, by the time they're pair programming and actually working on a project for a nonprofit, they already have a general understanding of programming. It's not like you just start out that way. So it's more of the graduates, if you will, of your curriculum get that place. Are those developers being paid, or are they volunteering? What's the deal there?
There's no money exchanging hands at all. Like okay. The nonprofit does not pay anything to Free Code Camp. The Agile project managers are doing this as a volunteer opportunity so that they can get credit toward earning a specific certification through the Project Management Institute. Mm-hmm. And then the campers themselves are basically doing this so they can get practical experience and complete our program.
Okay.
So there's literally no money involved, and that makes things actually very challenging because it like managing one of these projects is, you know, you're dealing, first of all, they're completely international. Like pretty much every project has people overseas. A lot of times the nonprofit is from a country other than the U.S. So there's time zone management. There's like people have to show up to these 30-minute weekly meetings. So you have to make sure that people have a lot of soft skills and are reliable and accountable for what they commit to being able to do. So it's actually like a pretty big miracle that we've completed a few dozen of these projects so far. Yeah. We've done more than $1 million worth of pro bono coding, and that's assuming like a very low hourly wage.
Right.
A lot of the projects we built, as you said, like probably would cost several hundred thousand dollars if you went to like a consultancy like Pivotal Labs or Thoughtbot and asked them to build it.
Well, so can we talk about an actual example of a nonprofit that you're working with?
Sure. So there's a gentleman named Michael Johnson who works for Free Code Camp. Free Code Camp only has 3 employees, including myself. And Michael is based in Washington, D.C., where all the nonprofits are. And he gets these applications constantly. And about 1 out of every 20 applications or so will say, this is a good fit.
Wow.
We can go forward with this project. For all the other ones, we do our best to point them to off-the-shelf solutions. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, the best solution for whatever problem they may have is like a Facebook group or installing Sugar CRM on an AWS instance or something like that. It doesn't involve custom code. We do our best to help all of these nonprofits, but once in a while, we'll get a project that actually looks like it's a good fit for us doing intensive custom development.
that's cool. So Free Code Camp can still be the go-to location. Talk to Michael as a nonprofit, and he can kind of steer you. Since he takes so many of those kind of calls, I'm sure he has a lot of suggested tools up his sleeve. So that's cool. That's a cool feature in general, even if you don't take on the project. Okay, so go ahead and talk about a project you decided, yeah, this makes this is a good fit.
One of the projects was an organization called Options, Inc., that was outside of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. They help people who have cognitive disabilities, like Down syndrome. They help them commute from their homes every day to grocery stores or factories or other places where they work. So even people who have cognitive disabilities can often work in a meaningful and productive capacity, but they do have some challenges getting to and from because most of them aren't able to like legally drive. So what Options Inc. does is it manages a fleet of buses that go out and pick up these people and take them to their places of work. And then at the end of the day, pick them up from work and take them back home. So it's essentially a logistics operation.
Sure.
And before the project, they were basically managing all of that using spreadsheets, trying to calculate what would be a reasonable path for, you know, these buses to travel, to go and pick people up and then, and a reasonable sequence to pick them up in. And of course, there are all these additional things, like some of the people involved were in wheelchairs. Some of them had to take medication at certain points throughout the day. Some of them had specific situations where they couldn't be around people of the opposite sex, for example, or you know, all kinds of different constraints.
And they were trying to track all that in spreadsheets.
Yes.
They need six people were picked up, but three of them are in wheelchairs, and you maybe can only fit, you know, three wheelchairs in the van. So like the complexity of that gets pretty great as you're helping lots of people. And of course, the more effective you can be at the pickup schedule, the better it's going to work for everybody. Less employees, less cost, all those things.
Right. And most importantly, just better service for the end user, who are these people who have cognitive disabilities who need to get to work in a time-efficient manner. Mm-hmm. Like any sort of mistake you may make, suboptimalities in the routes, for example, could result in people, you know, sitting idly on a bus for an extra 5-10 minutes a day.
Okay, so it's a total perfect example of a custom app needed to be built.
Yes.
All right.
And you know, there were, like, as far as I can tell, there weren't any off-the-shelf solutions. Even if they did want to pay money, they would address this very specific use case.
Right.
So what we did was what we always do. We found two campers who had recently completed the 1,200-hour curriculum and were ready to jump in. And we made sure that they jive with one another and that they both seemed reliable. Michael actually does calls with each of them. And then he, of course, does multiple calls with the stakeholder from the nonprofit to make sure that the project is going to be a good fit for us. And then we assign an agile project manager.
Is the Agile Product Manager a staff member of Free Code Camp?
They're part of our core team. Like many open source projects, Free Code Camp has a core team of contributors. Mm-hmm. And this is mostly people who do software development on Free Code Camp's open source code base, instructional designers who contribute to our curriculum, and also, you know, people doing ops, making sure the servers don't fall over. Mm-hmm. People like me that I do a few things, like I run the Medium publication, medium.freecodecamp.com. We publish a whole lot of articles related to learning to program.
So the project from Options Inc., there's a stakeholder at Options Inc., and there's a project manager to some degree, an agile lead, and then two of your code campers who've never really actually worked on a project like this before.
Generally not. About two-thirds of our campers have never worked as software developers before.
Wow, cool.
Like as professional software developers. And another third are like they've been working maybe as Java developers or building WordPress sites or doing a variety of different things, but not specifically web development.
Right.
So we get a mix of those once they get all the way up to this. I think in this case, both people were relatively new to software development.
Yeah, so describe the next step.
We had a big scope meeting where we talk about the specific needs of the project, and we break everything down into small tasks as possible. And from that, we kind of formulate the requirements of the project, which we call user stories. And that's basically, as a bus driver, I need a list of people to pick up and the proper sequence and location of those people. Or as a person who's creating these schedules, I need to be able to add a person to a bus. You know, all these various specific tasks that need to be done. Mm-hmm. And then we plan out over the course of the next 10 weeks to the extent possible. Really, it's week to week, but we kind of prioritize what needs to happen in what sequence. And then it's a very organic process from there on out. Every week we meet, we demo whatever we built to the nonprofit stakeholder. The nonprofit stakeholder gives feedback. And then gradually new things that need to be done emerge from this process, and they become new user stories for subsequent sprints.
The developers that are actually just took training, they haven't really done necessary software development at all. They're pair programming, so they got some support from each other. I'm assuming they also have support from, in general, some people at Free Code Camp that have more expertise. If they run into a problem they don't understand, they can get a little bit more help. But they also, this is very much like an internship for them, right? Because at the end of the cycle, at the end of this process, when the app is deployed and everything, their resume looks pretty sweet. They've got a custom app made in whatever technologies, and they're ready to hit the job market to some degree.
Yeah, well, what we'd like for them to do, so far nobody's ever actually finished Free Code Camp because they'll get jobs before they do. But, I mean, ideally we'd like for people to complete two what we call greenfield projects, where you're starting from scratch, or you're starting from open source software and you're building your solution, your custom solution. And then two legacy projects where you're taking a solution that a previous set of campers created and extending it for the nonprofit to address like additional needs that they have on top. Like after the nonprofits use the solution for a year or so, they're going to have all kinds of ideas for how it can be further improved. And then there'll be some, you know, routine maintenance and all that. And this gives the camper an opportunity to actually work with other people's code, which is a vital skill.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the most under-taught skills of all in computer science programs and everything. Like, it's very rare that you would just sit down and create an app from scratch. Like 99% of all software development is working with code that other people have written.
Including yourself a while ago, because of course, if you come back to a project after 6 months or a year, that code you're looking at looks like someone else wrote it anyway, because you don't remember all of it anyway. So like software development is all about working off of existing software. And pretty much all of our patterns on software development, you've probably heard things like object-oriented or functional programming. These are all patterns to make it more understandable for the programmer's mind to grasp what's going on. That's really what it's about. Because those patterns, actually, when they work, any of the types of software development patterns, when they actually function, the computer program, the compiled code, it doesn't look that way anyway. For the computer, it's irrelevant. The complexities in languages and software is about us understanding, which is really fascinating to think of it that way. So you've had a whole bunch of people go through these challenges. Like I see on I love the public interface on your about page. It says that for the certifications, you've had 1,713 people have earned the certification in front end. That's a lot of people. Not all those people, I'm assuming, then go on to a greenfield project for a nonprofit, right? They take off and go work somewhere else, right?
Correct. What we generally see is people start going out and applying for jobs. This is like an area that we're trying to understand ourselves, because hundreds and hundreds, maybe thousands of people have gotten jobs after working through Free Code Camp. There's no, like, we're not directly involved in placing them. This is just an organic process. Their portfolio looks a lot better. They're better at performing in these whiteboard interviews where they have to spend a lot of time doing algorithms, because algorithms are a huge portion of Free Code Camp. So they're able to go out and get jobs. And we would love for them to actually complete our entire very rigorous program.
Yeah.
But the reality is, a lot of times people will just get a job offer and they'll be like, okay, I can go learn on the job. And I mean, that's still a win for us. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. We want people to get jobs. But at the same time, if they actually stuck it out and completed the entire program, we think they would be able to get much better jobs and that they would be much better prepared for their jobs.
You're suggesting that education is good.
Yeah. I mean, I think you look at the math, like the statistics around this, you know, every year of post-secondary education increases your earning potential. And I mean, that's like a rough proxy.
Right.
But But I mean, school is very much a good thing. Education is very much a good thing. And the more you can get of it, the better. There's no point at which there's like more education is harmful,
Right.
as far as I can tell from the numbers.
You talked about challenges earlier, and this is basically the segments of the courses, if you will, the little steps where, you know, make an array and fill it with data or change the color of a text field, whatever, like these simple steps that actually teach you programming. You actually know how many people have completed that, and it looks like it's over 16 million of those challenges completed. That's a lot of participation in your system.
Yeah, we just hit 400,000 registered campers today, actually, I think.
Congratulations. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Thank you. Now, like, I mean, that for us is just like somebody signed up and took a few challenges. Like, for us, the real win is getting those people through and getting them jobs.
Yeah.
And most importantly, making sure that they succeed in those jobs and that they have a strong foundational knowledge so that they can adapt to the rapidly changing technology workplace.
Yeah. FreeCodeCamp.com is the site if you want to sign up and start learning to program or just kind of see what it's all about. Quincy, one piece of this I'm a little confused by. You're suggesting people can help the nonprofits by donating to them directly. You have people donating their time. I mean, first they learn a whole bunch of stuff from the system and then keep even learning kind of an internship program where they actually develop code if they get after the certificates. You have instructors that are writing curriculum. You only have three people being paid. But there has to be money for all of this at some level, right? Like three people that are getting paid, but also there's expenses running a business like this. Where's their money coming from? Where are you? How are you funded?
So we're just self-funded. I just took my savings and instead of buying a house here in the Bay Area, which as you know, is quite expensive. I was like, well, why don't we try to do this instead? Basically we're not making, like, I'm not paying myself anything. Michael Johnson in Washington, D.C., and Berkeley Martinez here in San Francisco, we're basically on like subsistence. They're on subsistence wages. And our goal is to just continue to grow without having to take any sort of VC funding or anything that would compromise our mission.
I love that idea. I love the not having VC money, and it makes a lot of sense because obviously your mission is like education and supporting nonprofits and making software development available for companies that necessarily couldn't afford the normal market. So like your mission stuff is so great. But at some point your funding, even though a house price in San Francisco and the Bay Area in general is really high, you might have had a lot of money from your own savings, at some point that's going to run out unless you have some kind of income. So is there some kind of income in the system?
Yeah. So we have some income coming from just selling merchandise, selling like t-shirts and FreeCodeCamp decals. And, we're looking into a lot of other ways of like increasing the types of different merchandise that we sell. Mm-hmm. That's a good way for us to actually give somebody something and get some money back without having to accept donations, which is kind of like a weird arrangement in many ways. And like eventually we're hoping that the fact that we're generating all these people that are able to go out and work at good companies like Spotify, GitHub and Expedia and like all these other places where our campers are getting jobs, that some of these companies will be interested in paying us a recruitment fee for helping recommend specific candidates that we think are a good fit for them. And there are plenty of other organizations that are doing this. I think a lot of coding boot camps, which FreeCodeCamp is not a coding boot camp, but a lot of coding boot camps do use FreeCodeCamp as a big part of their curriculum. A lot of boot camps, in addition to charging tuition, also will take kind of like a recruitment fee from the organizations that they introduce their candidates to.
Describe a boot camp for us.
Sure. So coding boot camp is like an intensive program. Historically, they've range from like 3 to 4 months where you basically you go into this intensive environment and you do nothing but program for like several months, and you'll get some level of instruction. It varies from boot camp to boot camp, but I think the general idea is that you spend as much time coding as possible and that you get to go through kind of crazy mistake and error riddled path of learning to code alongside other people who are doing it. So you have a little bit more of an immediate in-person support network.
Right. It's like a traditional school in some sense. It's just an intensive. So like if you've gone abroad and learned a language in 2 months by living in a country, it's similar to that, where you just, that's all you're doing is study. And of course, those vary in price, as you mentioned. Sometimes the developer, the potential developer has to pay a lot of money upfront. Sometimes it's a scholarship type program where there's some funding. And then sometimes the company that is pulling people out actually pays recruitment fees when they get jobs, and that money comes back. But normally there's a lot of money being passed around, and it's an intensive, which means you drop everything else you're doing to do this. And of course, that's not necessarily feasible for people that have like bills to pay.
Right. I mean, the core market for coding boot camps is really the just finished college to work maybe 1 or 2 years type crowd. So like I would say probably like 90% of the people who should attend a coding boot camp, for whom it would be a viable option, are probably between the ages of, 22 and 26.
Do you know your stats on who goes through your program?
Yeah, our median age is much higher. It's like 30, 31. Mm-hmm. And that's even with a huge influx of people from India who, if you look at the Indian population, much younger. In terms of people who actually complete our program, I would say generally they're in their mid-30s. Mm-hmm. And when I say complete the first 1,200 hours before the nonprofit projects. And some other interesting aspects of our community, like I said, one third of them have worked as a software developer professionally.
Right.
About 20% of them are women, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it actually is quite a bit more.
20% is high for the industry, sadly. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Stack Overflow survey, I think they determined that like 8% of all people working in software development are women, according to Stack Overflow.
Yeah. Stack Overflow, of course, is a really amazing resource for developers, their programming and such. You ask a question on Stack Overflow and other people answer those questions, and they're almost always technical. And the way the system works is it's relatively, it has good Google search indexing, which means it shows up in search results. You land these there a lot when you're searching for code errors. And there's a discussion about what the possible solutions are, and people get to rank the different solutions. So when you ask a question on there, any question that's asked over time on Slack Overflow, correct answers bubble up to the top and kind of get hardened. So it becomes a really amazing resource. If you're doing software development, you run into Stack Overflow all the time. And so you're saying that since there's so many people using there, they did user surveys, and it's women who are involved in Stack Overflow are less than 20%, you're saying?
According to the 2016 Stack Overflow survey of 50,000 developers, basically like every developer who uses Stack Overflow who took the time to fill it out, I think it was something like 6 or 8%. Mm-hmm. Of all respondents were women. So it was very, very low. I think that companies have obvious incentives to count positions that are not as development heavy for the sake of their diversity statistics. But I think that that's probably the best litmus of how, represented women actually are in the field. I mean, it's a tragedy that it's gotten to this point, because if you look at like the 1960s and 1970s, women were very well represented in programming, and that just sort of changed. There was just sort of these lost decades where women enrollment in computer science programs plunged, and it hasn't yet recovered. But it's definitely on the upswing, and I think a lot of it has to do with these great organizations like Women Who Code, and Girl Develop It, and Girls Who Code, who are going out there and really like reassuring women that they should get into technology, and there's no reason why they can't.
The structured transformation of desire to help nonprofits into software, that process has to be really structured. It's not like, you can do a work day down at the building that the nonprofit has and paint the wall. Like, that's a great thing to do at a nonprofit, absolutely. But the software needs are so complex, you can't just spend the day once a month or something like that. You have to invest it at a level that's pretty complex. And the thing that's wonderful is there's such a need for that kind of development. So to match the teaching and learning of that process of software development process to the needs of nonprofit businesses. Just, I love the fit. I think it's fantastic. And I'm really glad you made it. So thank you. I'm going to keep on promoting you guys as much as possible. I think it's wonderful. I do want to ask you a couple of questions. There's other projects that are similar, there's a lot of courses and online courses, Udacity, and I mean, there's tons of them. I don't want to list them. Those have their place as well. I'm assuming your curriculums are similar. Is that true?
We actually recommend that people explore and use a variety of different resources. Free Code Camp, first of all, or like first and foremost, is not a curriculum or some place that you necessarily learn to program. It's first and foremost, we're a community. And we have a massive chat room system. We have a massive forum where you can discuss any resources. Our goal is just to facilitate learning to code. So a lot of people, like I think we did our own survey of people who were learning to code, and we asked, you know, 15,000 people. And it wasn't just Free Code Camp campers. We had a lot of other organizations distribute this survey. What we found is the average person who's learning to code, like 60% of them don't spend any money at all. They spend like zero money. But they do use like three or four different resources. So yeah, like you mentioned Udacity, for example, they have some good data science related courses. Certainly online courses through edX, which is the Harvard and MIT collaborative effort. They release full university courses that you can work through. We encourage people to use all of those, anything that they see fit. What we didn't want to do was try to come across as a one-stop shop, like where you're like, oh, all you need to do to learn to code is just work through this curriculum, just ignore all those other people. We're not like that at all. In many ways, we perceive all these organizations to be our allies because they're helping people learn to code.
Yeah. Well, so congratulations on the project. I hope that you're able to turn this into an income for yourself so that you can maintain it for a long period of time. I think it's really interesting and admirable that you're not going for funding. It would change the mission of your project. It sounds like you're more visionary-based than profit margin-based. I'm assuming that's the case. Why is that? What is it about you that made you think this is the good thing to commit your life to?
Well, I mean, I personally, well, I'm like a really simple guy. I've got my daughter. We go for runs and just kind of hang out. And I, you know, I spend a lot of time reading. I spend a lot of time writing. Like the things I like to do for fun don't cost any money. I don't really care to have a lot of money. I don't think anybody involved in Free Code Camp really cares about that. What is much more interesting to me is helping people. And I think that I can do all that without making a lot of money. Like society is kind of like, we look at people's contributions in many ways as how much money they get as a result. Like you can look at people that are very wealthy and think, oh, they must have done a whole lot of, they must have created a whole lot of economic value to get there. But then if you look at like Salman Khan, who created Khan Academy, or if you look at Jimmy Wales, who created Wikipedia, they're not rich, you know, and they don't seem to care to be rich. They're just happy that they've helped out. And I look to these people as role models, and Free Code Camp is very much a spiritual child or successor or sibling to these other organizations that are basically seeking to help people, especially overseas. You're not going to make a lot of money if you're trying to monetize relatively poor kids in India or in China. There's not a lot of money in that. If you focus on creating content for the entire world, you basically have to eschew a lot of profit in the process. One of the things we considered doing very early on before I even created Free Code Camp was like, maybe I should create some sort of boot camp. Because if you look at the economics of a boot camp, you've got very little risk in the sense that the people are paying you directly. The students are paying you directly, and the students bear the risk.
Right. You get paid even if they don't get a job.
Yeah, the only risk is that your reputation becomes bad because people don't actually go out and effectively get the jobs. Sure. And then some ways, like you can just rebrand, which right. some places have done.
But why do you decide not to do that?
Well, because I don't really care about money. You know, like if we have enough, I theorize that we could sell enough in t-shirts and stickers and, you know, potentially like electronic books or physical books or other like physical things that you buy that are not related to or certainly not necessary to completing our program, that we can keep it afloat. I mean, we're talking, you know, a few $100,000 a year.
Right. Right.
We don't market. We don't spend money on advertising. We don't obviously spend money on software developers.
Yeah.
Because that's like one of the biggest costs associated with running a software business. It's just like headcount. there's no reason why we can't stay extremely lean. We're not trying to get gigantic and swallow up the world like every venture capital company, funding company has to, so that they can maintain a competitive edge. So I would say for us, success is just like helping people learn to code and go out and get coding jobs.
And help the nonprofits as a side effect to some degree.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost kind of secondary. Yeah. It's just a happy coincidence that there are so many nonprofits out there for whom we can, you know, code and get practical experience. At the end of the day, it's about the individual learners and yeah. their career goals and making sure that everything is aligned to maximize their likelihood of being able to successfully transition into software development as a career.
So Quincy, is there anything else you want to close out before we say goodbye?
So FreeCodeCamp is completely open source. Literally anyone can go in and look at all the code that's running. You could create your own server running FreeCodeCamp's code if you wanted to. This basically ensures that FreeCodeCamp is uncorruptible and immortal, if you will, because if somebody strongly disagrees with some sort of decision that FreeCodeCamp has made, they could just fork it. And there's a good chance that if they're in the right, that a lot of the contributors will just follow.
Since it's all open source and it's based completely off that, the intellectual property, if you will, is owned by everybody. That means it does have this kind of persistence that's outside the people that are running it right now. It could be that the three of you that are currently involved fade away or stop or whatever. Somebody else could continue it because all of the content there is open source. That's a good way of ensuring longevity of a mission.
Yeah, so whether or not FreeCodeCamp is a financial success, and like I'm aiming extremely low to basically get at market rate wages for me and the other two guys that are working on this, is really beside the point. Like FreeCodeCamp will always exist as long as people are interested in working through it and maintaining it. Like the genie is out of the proverbial bottle.
Yeah.
So that's something that I'm extremely proud of as a developer, that this project has taken off and that we have hundreds of contributors and that, you know, we have people contributing practically every hour of every day. The curriculum is getting better and that we're able to run it in a very decentralized way where basically it's just on GitHub. People create issues, people suggest things, people implement things and show them. And the core team, which is about 25 people at this point of our open source project, can basically discuss those changes and literally anybody can come in and contribute. We've had some high profile contributors from the open source community, and then we've had people who've literally never made any sort of open source contribution before who bring about this great improvement to FreeCodeCamp. So
fantastic.
It's great. If anyone out there is interested in creating an organization that has the potential for significant change, that they don't want to be subject to the whims of the business world or of popular opinion or anything like that. If you create an open source project and you put it out there, it is essentially immortal.
Yeah. Well, Quincy, thank you so much for being on Geek Speak today. I really appreciate it. And thank you so much for creating this amazing project, FreeCodeCamp.
Thank you so much for having me, Lyle. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Geek Speak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. Use our stuff any way you'd like. Just let them know the geek said hi. Thanks to our intern, Chandler, our theme song of Michael Newman, Pet Star Music, and thank you for being for episode 26 of our 16th season.